Brian, thank you very much. I saw a very strange story this morning in ProPublica. That's a website, ProPublica.org. Here's the gist of it, and one of the authors of that story is joining us to help explain, because it's almost unbelievable. Tens of thousands of people every year are sent to jail based on the results of a $2 roadside drug test. The problem is the results are horribly inaccurate. People are going to jail for nothing. Joining us right now is Topher Sanders, one of the authors of that article for ProPublica.org. Topher, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, Bill.
Explain briefly this drug test. Now, this is something that law enforcement is equipped with, and it costs roughly $2 to get this drug test, right?
That's correct. Yeah, so the drug test is kind of like a vial of reagent chemicals inside a plastic baggie. And law enforcement officers, if they encounter someone that they believe has an illicit substance on them, they can take that substance, put it into the baggie, break the vial with the chemical substance in it, shake it up a bit, tap it, get it to react to whatever's in there, and based on color changes can determine whether or not the person has heroin, cocaine, meth, etc.
But it's not as accurate as law enforcement believes it to be, Topher. This is Anna.
Hey, Anna, that's our findings, is that it's not as accurate as law enforcement may think it is.
What is the percentage? How do you know that it's not as accurate?
Well, we have one great municipality that kind of flows to the top and gives us an idea of what it looks like, and that's out of Houston, and that's kind of the centerpiece of the data that we have. And also we have examples out of Florida and Vegas, et cetera. But out of Houston, we were able to see that in about a decade span, they found 400 cases that had problems associated with these drug field tests. 300 of those cases all came from Houston PD. And of those, 200 of them were folks that took plea deals, but then later were found to not have any drugs at all on them.
Which so means they spent cases, time in jail, Topher.
Yeah. Some of those folks definitely spent time in jail, either waiting for, the trial to kind of get worked out or a plea to get worked out. And some people ended up spending more time in jail than that.
Are all these drug kits manufactured by the same company, or is it different companies making them?
They're different companies. About three big companies make these different drug kits.
And is there any disclaimer, like when they sell these to law enforcement around the country, do they say that there's a certain margin of error or not?
No,
they don't.
And in fact, the federal government recommended strongly through the 70s and 80s that there be explicit marking on the packets of these products. And when we went back to talk to the biggest makers, they did not have those markings on their packets. At least one of those makers has since changed after we sent them a letter saying, hey, here are our findings. They started to put markings on their packets to explicitly say that, hey, this is not an infallible piece of evidence here.
How long have the kits been in use?
Since the 70s. Created in 73. And went wide to law enforcement in around 78, right when the drug war started to kick up big and large. Law enforcement saw these as a very efficient way to dispose of possession cases.
And
I'll go on, Anna.
No, go ahead, Bill.
In all that time, was there ever a defense attorney who said, hey, my client is being held or has done some jail time for a drug test that may or may not be as accurate as you think it is? Has that come up on any occasions?
It totally has. And in fact, it was through some case law that it became clear that these kits could not be admissible into court. And that kind of is the kind of driving thrust of our story, is that it isn't about these drug kits showing up in a court of law and there being, kind of fact finding around them because courts don't admit them. It's about them being used to leverage plea deals and folks feeling though they don't have much of a choice and taking a plea deal based on the field test alone.
So do these people end up with this on their record? Can they expunge their record? Do they now have a felony on their record, like the poor woman on your story?
Yes, they do. Oh. And they can expunge it if they know about it.
And how to do it, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of what happened with Amy Albritton, is it wasn't until my reporting colleague, Ryan Gabrielson, gave her a call to let her know that, that conviction that you had, it was a false conviction. It shouldn't have happened. And she, to her heart, knew that what they said it was in that car, which was, you know, cocaine, she knew that it wasn't that, but she had no proof, and she didn't know that the courts had determined without a doubt that indeed she was innocent.
And this is a woman, I'm trying to remember because you tell a couple of case studies in your story. This was the woman in Houston, Texas, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was driving through Houston but was from Louisiana, that's correct.
I'm sorry, that's right. And so they stopped her. I'm trying to remember why they stopped her. Was it just a routine stop? They thought she was speeding or something, or what happened?
Yeah, it was a didn't signal a turn stop, and so then pulled her over, and from there learned that the driver, which was her boyfriend at the time, didn't have his license, and that escalated the entire encounter at that point, and that's when they asked if they could search her vehicle and found material on the floorboard that when they threw it into the fill kit, they determined that it was cocaine.
It's so insane with the numbers that you guys have thrown out there of how many inaccuracies. I could certainly see where one or two might fall through, but you're talking hundreds or even thousands of mistakes over the years.
Yeah, I mean, we were able to get the entire database for the state of Florida. So all instances where someone sent, someone being the law enforcement agencies in the state of Florida, sent drug material to the state lab and asked for a confirmation test. And so let's just take meth, for example. Mm-hmm. In a five-year swath where law enforcement agencies in Florida sent meth, items they described as meth, to the state lab and asked for confirmation testing, 20% of the time it was not meth. And 10% of the time, it wasn't a drug at all. And so those are just the cases that they're sending. They don't send the cases to the state lab where they've already got a plea deal. So it's really difficult to get an idea of how many people are actually being subjected to these bad convictions.
And then people don't believe that there are some innocent people in jail.
Right.
Who get caught up because these things don't happen quickly. The process, the judicial process, especially if you don't have money, does not happen quickly. You can't bring your case up to court again after you've done a plea deal quick enough. You don't have the money for the attorney.
Yeah, so true.
And if you talk to enough people, that is often one of the reasons they're so willing to plead.
Yeah.
Even if they know they're innocent. You take someone like Amy. Mm-hmm. She's got a son at home with disabilities that she has to get back to. She's got a job that she has to get back to. She's in a state that is not her home state, and yet she's sitting in a county jail. She wants to get out. And so when given the opportunity, people take that opportunity.
She was told it would be 45 days or less than 45 days.
Yeah.
Yep.
Topher Sanders is our guest. He is a co-author of a great story on ProPublica.org that tells about these $2 roadside drug tests and how inaccurate they've been. Topher, George is on the line. George is a police officer and has a little something to add to the story. George, thanks for calling in.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, George.
What do you know about this, George?
I don't know what kind of tests they are. I know in the northwest suburbs, we use the reagent, and it's a preliminary drug test. Nobody ever goes to jail on a preliminary drug test. The drug test that we used on the street for cocaine, at the time when I'm a retired police officer, we didn't have a test for methamphetamine. And usually methamphetamine would come back, months later through the lab. But the presumptive test is like a field test for DUI. It gives us probable cause to believe. My question would be on all these cases, if it wasn't cocaine, what is it?
If they find some sort of powder, what are they going to, other than cocaine, what would it be?
It could be a lot of things. Well, in the case, they weren't able to determine what it was in Amy's case, but everything from migraine medicine to household cleaners can give a positive reaction to the cocaine reagent.
Interesting. All right. Now,
my experience is if it had a little bit of cocaine in it and what we called cut, it came back positive. Then we would send whatever drugs we had to the lab. State's attorneys in Cook County never accepted the preliminary test to send somebody to jail. If the test from the lab came back negative, case was dropped.
But would you take the person into custody?
You'd hold them, wouldn't you?
We would take them and charge them.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And charge them.
We would take them and hold them, and they'd be able to make a bond. And because there is no lab immediately, the judge would ask us, what was the preliminary test? Came back positive for marijuana, cocaine, whatever. And, you know, then we have a white powder, too, that we found. And we still had to prove probable cause. And probable cause just wasn't the test that we got. It was the totality of the events. We stopped him. He didn't have a license. We searched his car. We towed his car, and we found this white powder. The white powder tested positive for cocaine. That was the steps to it. I mean, it's pretty simple.
Right, right.
And, you know, nobody ever went to jail, though, on a preliminary test that came back positive where the state lab came back as negative.
Topher, were these preliminary tests, or were these the... Go ahead.
Yeah, everything about a field test is preliminary. It's all presumptive. And so everything that George is saying sounds right. Uh-huh. The only difference is that in other jurisdictions, they will accept the plea conviction without having a confirmation from the lab. And that is the rub. Right. And that's what happened.
And that can happen here, too.
Okay.
That can happen. And then we get into an argument of why would you plead to something that you're innocent of? That would be my police side coming out.
Well,
it's not right.
And George, just really quickly, because I'm trying to envision the whole scenario. Once you pull somebody over, exactly what point after you've pulled them over would this test be used? Where would that come into play exactly?
Usually, immediately. If you didn't have one on you, we would call a sergeant. They were usually in the trunks of squad cars, just for that reason.
All right.
Before we arrest you, if we have an arrestable offense where we're going to seize your car, and that's going to be a tow, we're going to tow your car, we have to do a search of it. And we search the car, we find something, or we find it on you, we take a small sample of it, and we do a preliminary test with it.
It's not like in movies where you'll see a cop kind of taste it for a second, and they can determine that doesn't happen, does it?
No one wants to taste
I don't think so.
We never taste anything we don't know what
exactly.
It is.
Exactly. Right. Good advice. On the floor of a car.
Solid advice. Yeah. All right. Yeah. George, thank you.
The only thing is that,
problem.
All these things, and Topher, on your article, it's so well expressed. This woman, Amy, she is crying hysterically, and she gets a lawyer assigned to her. This is not a woman who can make a phone call to a family attorney and think very matter-of-factly. She had dated this guy for a month. She was wondering, well, maybe, did he have something? Did he not have something? So it's not as matter-of-fact. Not everybody is a police officer. I'm an educated woman. I don't know what the I get nervous during a traffic stop.
Sure, of course.
I don't know where to put my hands. Where's my insurance? So I think it's a little more gray and complicated than this. When she gets stopped, she's nervous. This attorney that was assigned to her said, well, they found something and it's cocaine. And this is the best case scenario to get you out of this. She's in a place she doesn't know.
Yeah.
No one's answering the phone that she knows. She can't rely on anybody. So she goes with it. I can totally see that happening.
Yeah.
And that's what happens with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. You know, the encounters with police are scary for folks. And when we talk to people, again and again, we were told about, you know, them feeling firm that it wasn't the substance they were being told it was. But then again, this is the police in front of you waving some chemical thing telling you that you have a drug.
It looks pretty convincing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let me get another call in really quickly. Eric is on the phone. Eric got falsely arrested for cocaine possession. What was your story, Eric? What exactly happened there?
Well, when I was in the Army in Germany, they did a health and welfare inspection. And me and my buddy both got, I don't know if you'd say arrested, we got detained. They said it was approximately $500,000 worth of cocaine.
In your car or where?
In our lockers in the barracks.
Okay.
They said, you know, it was cocaine. They had to do further tests. But actually, all it was powder protein for weightlifting.
Oh, wow.
It just didn't have a label on the big jugs that we had in our locker.
Yeah. And did they do a similar test like the one that Topher's talking about, a chemical analysis test?
I honestly don't know what kind it was, but they said it was a preliminary test that came up positive, and then they would have to do another one. So they held us in, the military holding cell for a few hours.
Yeah.
Oh. Diet pills way back when had crack or speed.
Very similar compound.
To do it too. Mm-hmm. They told us all of those things would come up. That's why they tested right away afterwards. But we told them, where are we going to get the money to buy that much cocaine and leave it in our lockers like that?
You're a cartel all to yourselves.
Sure.
Right. And it's the big jugs that you see in, like, what was it, GNC and stuff that we had.
Wow.
And they found out what it really was, and then they let us go again.
Interesting.
How about that? Eric, thank you.
Take care. I love your show.
Thank you, sir. All right. So, Topher, I guess the big question is this. Now that you've written this expose, and it's certainly a good one, what happens now? Are they changing the rules with these drug tests? What's going to happen?
You know, when it comes to these types of reporting, you just kind of wait and see. We do have some additional reporting that we'll be doing. But as far as what municipalities will do with this information, that's up to them. You know, what I can tell you is that when we talked to the Prosecutors Association out of D.C., which is the membership organization for a lot of the big prosecuting houses throughout the country, they told us that they don't believe municipalities should be taking these deals absent a law, a lab confirmation. In fact, I think the word used was sloppy. If you're taking people's convictions in the absence of a lab confirmation test and just using these presumptive tests.
And they refer to this as sloppy how? I'm not sure how that, I understand that.
Well, sloppy because you all you have is presumptive.
And oh, okay, all right.
The realization that there
it's not enough.
The possibility that it isn't a drug at all or some other drug, because to be clear, I just want to make, there are instances where it's just a different drug. It isn't that it isn't a drug at all.
Right.
It's just that the test came back and told you it was, you know, meth when actually it was cocaine. So,
right.
Yeah.
Well, a great job on the story. Topher Sanders has written the story along with Ryan Gabrielson. You can read it for yourself at ProPublica.org. That's where we found it this morning. Thanks so much, Topher. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you guys for having me.
Have a great weekend. We're going to take
a
quick break and then a little bit more show, and then Brian Noonan will be in. Stay where you are. It's Bill Leff and Anna Balaval in for Wendy Snyder on WGN.